broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips. This is the broadcast for August the 4th in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is hour two of two, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. The checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers. What are the great peaceful solutions we have at our fingertips? And as you know, we reject revolution. We stand for great restoration of the freest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. Hopefully the great restoration is underway. Wow. Anyway, there's so much news, it's hard to know what to even cover. But I got some interesting tidbits for you, and then a great interview for you. How's that? Let's do it. It all continues now, if you will. Rutgers University. Guy's a microbiologist. His name is Dr. Richard Ebright. Or Ebright? I don't know. Ebright, I guess. He testified before the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Senate, actually, on Wednesday, and he testified that top public health officials lied about dangerous gain-of-function, they call it GOF, gain-of-function, right? Anyway, research. Experiments conducted in China? Yeah. He said they lied. And he directly is now at odds with Fauci and the rest of the clowns that have said forever, no, 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 no. But this guy says, oh, yes. Oh, yes, you can't play games with the definitions. These definitions are real. And you can't change the definition and you can't deny the definition. And so now, believe it or not, senators on a key Homeland Security subcommittee are arguing for an expansive review of gain-of-function research, which opponents are saying and are arguing that it may have created the COVID-19 virus. Yeah, this will be during a first ever kind of hearing on Wednesday. So what do you think of that now? Now we literally have a microbiologist testifying before the Senate, literally saying your government lied about gain-of-function research, and he's standing up. And now certain members of Congress in the Senate, senators on a key Homeland Security, they're saying we got to dig into this. We got to get to the bottom of this. This is a serious problem. It might have even been the creation of might have been the creation of the coronavirus. What do you think of that, folks? I think it's riveting. But I also think it's what we've been kind of telling you all along, right? We've been saying that gain-of-function research is the cause. We've been saying that out of North Carolina lab, I think it is. We've been saying that our work with the communist Chinese and the work in the Ukraine and all these things, we're saying that Fauci and others created the coronavirus, that it was created in a lab and intentionally released. We've been saying that for a long time. For the first couple weeks when the corona came out, we hesitated a little bit because we wanted to get our details right. We wanted to really understand what we're talking about. And there's been plenty of confusion and subterfuge and everything else regarding this. But folks, we've been telling you. And telling you. And telling you. And every time we tell you, they say, oh, they don't have any credentials. They're fake news. They're conspiracy theorists. They're nuts on parade. They're crazy. But folks, the truth shall set you free. All right. Now you've literally got a key microbiologist standing up against Fauci. And it's at Rutgers University, microbiologist Dr. Richard Ebright. And he's saying, look, the government lied to you. And now senators on a key Homeland Security subcommittee are arguing for an expansive review of gain-of-function research, which opponents argue may have created the COVID-19 virus. That's critical, folks. That's serious. And the problem that I have is, why have they been allowed to attack me for telling the truth? I got deplatformed from Twitter for telling repeating a headline from an Israeli news organization, a large Israeli news organization, and then a United States organization that carried that story too, saying, hey, more people are dying from the coronavirus shot than they are from the coronavirus itself over there in Israel. Well, literally, Twitter shut my account down, saying you got to retract that fake news. If you do, we'll put you back up. And I wouldn't retract it because it's not fake news. It's a legitimate news organization that's reporting this, and I'm merely reporting what they're reporting. Do I have that right? Do I have that free speech right or no? Twitter says no, and they shut me down. I say yes, and I'm refusing to back down to Twitter. I'm not going to retract it because it's true. It's true that it is factual, but it's even more true that that's what they're reporting. So I never claimed the facts of it. They're claiming the facts. I merely, retweeted or the equivalent of the headline saying, look, this is what's in the news, folks. The problem is they don't want you to see that in the United States. It's an international story, and they wanted to block it, blackball the story from the press in America. That's the problem that I'm having. Anyway, now this Rutgers University microbiologist Richard Ebright is taking on Fauci. And now Senate leaders like Rand Paul and others are saying, yep, we've been telling you that too. We need to dig into this more with our subcommittees. Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in the government subcommittees. I really don't. But I will say at least it's proving our point. It's highlighting what we've been saying all along. It's somewhat truth-telling, and we got to focus on it. Now, what we really need is several hundred microbiologists and doctors and experts and whatever the other professionals supposedly need to be to claim, knowledge on this. We need them to stand up and say, yes, that's true. Shame on Fauci. You're wrong. We've had a few people stand up, but the people that have stood up have been attacked relentlessly, and their whole credibility has been jeopardized over standing up, right? I mean, that's really kind of the problem here. All right, Dr. Robert Malone explains why COVID-boosted people are getting even more bad news. But see, now they attack Robert Malone. He was a rock star when he was one of the people that was literally creating vaccines. Now he's saying, hey, they're not as safe and effective as you believed, and be careful, says Robert Malone. And now they attack him and say he's a quack. He's off his rock. He's a conspiracy theorist nut. But COVID-19 vaccines hinder the immune systems and leads to more severe illness, Dr. Robert Malone highlights. This is serious. This is serious indeed, especially in the wake of this microbiologist saying Fauci lied. They say COVID-boosted people get more bad news. Wow. Our buddy Josh Phillips is on the story from the Epoch Times. But a study out of the United Kingdom now has shown that healthcare workers who receive multiple COVID-19 boosters after initially being infected with a virus strain are more prone to chronic reinfections. This may help you understand why people who have received multiple boosters are increasingly the ones who end up in the hospital with severe COVID-19 symptoms, often resulting in death, said now scientists and Dr. Robert Malone. Malone, he's an inventor of the mRNA vaccine technology. He said this phenomenon is a result of a process called immune imprinting while initial exposure to a virus strain may prevent the body from producing enough neutralizing antibodies against the newer strain. This is just hard to even, this is hard to even deal with, isn't it? When you read this stuff, you just go, what the heck? Yeah. This is what we're talking about. I don't know how to respond to this kind of stuff, folks. We're just getting more and more evidence. This process is part of a phenomenon called immune imprinting, whereby initial exposure to a virus strain may prevent the body from producing enough neutralizing antibodies against the newer strain. This process is reinforced by multiple inoculations. In other words, it gets worse the more you inoculate. All over the world, we're seeing these data sets that show that, you know what? Hey, the highly vaccinated are the ones that are getting hospitalized more than anybody else. Folks, how do you deal with this stuff? Quick pause. I am Sam Bushman.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
I think that my family has always had a big influence on me for not smoking because since I was little, I was taught that smoking was wrong.
Recent studies indicate that smoking among teens often leads to the use of alcohol and other drugs.
I think having faith in God is a big part in it because the way I was raised has helped to avoid smoking.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
All right, back with you live. There's just so much here, it's shocking. The Epic Times doing a phenomenal job. Anyway, that's enough on vaccines. Every time we talk about them, we get more and more evidence of the dangers of and the ill effects of vaccinations, folks. We told you not to take them, and we maintain our stance. The supposed experts now have got a lot of egg on their face, baby. And the more evidence every day proves the point. Shame on them, because it's one thing if they believe in vaccines for them to say, look, we're just, you know, pushing and promoting our beliefs. I have the right to do that too, by the way, if you didn't remember. But they tried to force their will on us. And they're supposed to be the experts. And they mocked us, claiming we were not the experts, and therefore we didn't know. But then again, us conspiracy theorists turned out to be conspiracy fact. They created and plotted and released the coronavirus and the vaccine, and they ruined our whole society in a great reset over it. They can say that's conspiracy, but you go look at the train wreck of economic turmoil the train wreck of people's healths on the wake of their coup, if you will. And you say I'm a conspiracy theorist? Just look at the evidence, folks. The economy's in shambles. People's health in shambles. And so if I'm a conspiracy theorist, there's sure a lot of death, bad health, economic meltdown in the wake of my conspiracy theory, huh? Anyway, I want to repeat this so that you understand. This phenomenon they're talking about is the result of a process called immune imprinting, where initial exposure to a virus strain may prevent the body from producing enough neutralizing antibodies against a newer strain. So in other words, you take coronavirus vaccine, you don't get enough of it, and it basically retards your body's ability to respond to the next one. Does that make sense? Your body is has been put in a retarded state, and I don't mean that in an offensive way. I'm not talking about mentally ill people, okay? The term retardation is used in a lot of different settings, but it retards your body's ability. It slows down your body's ability to build up enough antibodies to the next one because it's different. So you don't have the neutralizing bodies. This process is increased or reinforced by multiple inoculations. In other words, it makes it worse the more vaccines you get. Think about that, folks. You've got doctors that are documenting this regardless of what your mainstream press says, and they're getting egg on their face everywhere. All right, the next question, do you support busing illegals to D.C.? I think it's an interesting question because what happened is, remember, the border leaks like a sieve, and Joe says it's not a crisis, it's no problem, it's all good. Everybody else in the streets and in life, they're panicking. It's kind of like trying to define recession. Joe says we're not in one, don't worry, there's jobs everywhere, and everybody else says, yeah, we're in one, and then someone says, well, you just changed the definition, and someone says, no, I didn't, you know, and we debate that. Same thing with the border. You know, Joe says the border's fine. Everybody else, including county sheriffs all over the country and everybody else, are saying, look, we're getting overwhelmed by illegals. So what happened is some Texas governor, Greg Abbott, and others started saying, we're going to, and some sheriffs, we're going to just start busing the illegals to Washington, D.C. then. If it's not a problem, why don't you take them? So they started busing them to D.C., just like Joe's busing them all around the country. And now people in D.C. are starting to go, wait a minute, we got a problem with the illegals, man. And the Texas folks are saying, welcome to our world. Well, the battle's on. And the debate now is, hey, what gives? Do you support busing illegals to D.C.? And my response is, I don't. I get that you want D.C. to feel the pain. I understand all that. And I get that to some degree that's working, but it's not really working. Joe is still in his mansion, the people's mansion, if you will, by illegal means. In other words, election fraud, just my opinion to which I'm entitled. So Joe doesn't care. He's got bodyguards and security and everything else, right? And so he won't care, and he won't know, and he won't admit it, and he'll just deny it. But the people are suffering all across this country. I would submit that the sheriffs needs to deport these criminals. And I would say that we need to have a real check. So I don't think peacefully putting them on a bus and sending them to D.C. is the answer. If you're going to send them somewhere, send them out of the country would be my response. So I appreciate the sheriffs trying to have a political battle. But sending them to D.C. is just a political discussion. Because if you're not careful, then they'll get a non-private organization backed by churches that'll just, whenever they arrive to D.C., send them elsewhere. In other words, passing the buck isn't the answer. Sending them out of the country and finding a way to uphold our laws would be the real answer. So if you say, do we send them to D.C. or not, Sam? I would say, I guess if those are the only two choices, yes, send them to D.C. Because at least then the D.C. folks kind of feel the pain and get it. But it's not solving the problem at all. It's just passing the buck and playing political football. The fact is you've got to uphold the law and get rid of them. Send them out of the country. They don't belong here. And you would say, Sam, aren't we kind? Aren't we our brother's neighbor? Aren't we ministers of Jesus Christ? Yeah, we are, but we still can't support illegal activity. That's the problem, is we need to update our laws. We need to shut the illegal door big time, but we need to increase the legal door. Why do I spend so much time on it? Because I just met a guy yesterday who is an Indian or he's from India, and he immigrated to the United States. And I talked to him, and he was the nicest guy in the world. And I said, hey, are you a U.S. citizen? He said, yes, of course I am. I said, really, why did you come? He said, because I wanted to be able to prosper. I couldn't prosper in my own country, but I knew if I came to America, I could prosper. Doesn't that tell the whole story, folks? And so I said to him, I said, well, you know, how? Tell me about coming here. And he said, look, it was a long, hard road. It was very difficult to come here the right way. And I just was so shocked at what he said. I commend him. What a hero. He comes to America. He knows the prosperity and the blessings that America provides. And he says, I want to come here the right way. So he gets his legal papers in order, and he becomes an American citizen. Guy's a hero. So I don't support busing illegals to D.C. because I think it's just passing the political football and creating a great media story, but it's not really getting hardcore. Shut the illegal door and open the legal door to where people can come here, like that gentleman who had a long, hard road to get here, but he did it right. Why don't we make his road easier? Huh? Why don't we make his road easier? That's what I would recommend, see? I would really recommend that, big time, right? Because that's what we need to do, folks. We really do. All right, we're going to have an interview that I conducted at the Freedom Fest. Guy's name is Dave Shostokas. He's an attorney. He's also an author of two incredible books. Constitutional Soundbites is the first one. And Creating the Declaration of Independence, another one. If you want to learn more, go to his website, shostokas.com, S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S.com, Dave Shostokas. And we talked about his educational constitutional series called Constitutionally Speaking, where he talks about the Declaration is the inspiration and the Constitution is the execution. That is such a good phrase. I want to start using it in my program more. Not to steal it from him, but because he's so spot on right about this. The Declaration is the inspiration, and the Constitution is the execution. Boy, howdy, is that a good way to put it. Because that means we don't need to go back to the Declaration, to the Articles of Confederation. We need to use the supreme law of the land. We need to use the execution documents, the supreme law, as the guidance, whether it be the Border Patrol and protecting our borders, whether it be slamming the illegal immigration door shut, but opening a legal, appropriate way for people to come to America, make sure that the people who want to come for the right reasons, etc. Whether it be honest money, whether it be, look, the Constitution is the execution. It is the guide, the solution, the answer, right? Every time it's the answer. And we talk about this really to some degree, to ad nauseum, to the point where it's just like, are you saying this against that? Yes, I am. Because I don't think we as a people get it enough, right? I don't think we as a people really internalize what I'm talking about. It's like, Sam, I hear you and I agree. Everybody I talk to almost, when I tell them what our show's about, I say it's hardcore, you probably won't like it. And they're like, well, it depends on what it's about. And then I eventually say, hey, if it's constitutional, I love it. And if it's not, you know what? I hate it. And really, to a person, they go, well, man, I agree with that. And then I say, it means that I get rid of 90% of the government. And then they start to hesitate and go, because they don't really realize how unconstitutional our system has become. But then I say, look, if it's God, family, and country that we're promoting, and if it's protecting life, liberty, and property, and if it's constitutional, I'm in all the way. And they say, well, I agree with that. And then I say, look, I stand for the proper role of constitutional government. I stand with the supreme law of our land. They generally agree and say, good for you. We need more of that. My response? Amen. That's why we're here.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
U.S. USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marusso reporting. By an overwhelming 86-11 vote, the Senate Tuesday night gave final passage to a bill that ramps up health care and disability benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxins. The PACT Act of 2022 passed Tuesday night. Pat Toomey, who led the Republicans installing the measure, warned that it included what he calls a trick that would permit indiscriminate spending. And a school in Utah has removed books from the shelves.
Utah's largest public school district is defending its decision to remove 52 books that some parents view as pornographic. The Alpine School District has roughly 84,000 students. The district decided to pull the books by 41 authors from its library shelves after an internal audit flagged them as sensitive material without literary merit. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
I'm Tony Marusso for USA Radio News.
Mike Lindell and MyPillow offering the BOGO extravaganza right now on a whole slew of MyPillow products. Now you can find all sorts of great deals on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillow, six-piece towel sets, Roll and Go Anywhere pillows, much more, all priced buy one, get one free. Go to MyPillow.com/USA, use promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175 and find you some great MyPillow products. They're all available. Oh, by the way, you can also get Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase, but you have to go to MyPillow.com/USA or call 1-800-951-8175. 8175 and make sure you use the promo code, the buy one get one extravaganza, going on right now at mypillow.com.
A kidnapped girl's escape in Alabama has led to the discovery of two decomposing bodies and the arrest of a man now facing murder and kidnapping charges. Police got a call Monday morning from a driver about a 12-year-old girl walking alone along County Road 34 in Dadeville, Tallapoosa County. Sheriff Jimmy Abbott said Tuesday at a news conference the girl had been restrained to bedposts for about a week, according to the criminal complaint. Jose Paulino Pascal Reyes, 37, was arrested Monday about 25 miles away in Auburn on suspicion of first-degree kidnapping by U.S. Marshals and police, the sheriff said, adding other agencies are also on this case. U.S. job openings fell by the most in just over 2 years in June as demand for workers eased in the retail and wholesale trade industries. But overall, the labor market remains tight, allowing the Federal Reserve to continue raising interest rates. At least 4.2 million workers voluntarily quit their jobs in June and layoffs declined. This is USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. So we did a bunch of interviews at Freedom Fest. It was a phenomenal time, man. I've been on the road so much this last, quarter and a half, if you want to say that, a little beyond the summer. It's just been amazing. I mean, incredible experiences, I might add. So it's been really worth it. But, man, it's been taxing, exhausting, and we're not done yet. So stay tuned for a few more on-the-road ventures this year. Boy, howdy, have we traveled. All right, this interview with Dave starts now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, happy to have you along. Sam Bushman continuing live from Freedom Fest, baby. It's day four, and man, the incredible guests just keep a-coming, folks. Dave Shostokas is with me, and Dave is a very interesting guy from Illinois, and he ran for attorney general. Didn't work out perfect, but you know what? There's two reasons to run for office. One is to win, obviously. That did not happen. But the other one is to hold people accountable and create educational discussions, which does happen. And whenever you have a constitutionalist candidate standing up and they deliver the real sound bites, the real information, then it creates real discussion, real debate, real information that does absolutely make a difference. It holds them accountable. It moves the whole discussion a lot more constitutional than it would have been otherwise. So there's a lot of reasons to run for office. And he did a great job from what we understand in that. Not only is he an attorney. Not only did he run for office, but he's also a constitutional scholar, and he's an author of two books. Constitutional Soundbites is one of them, and Creating the Declaration of Independence is the other. Now, if you want to learn more about Dave, you got to go to his website, which is shostokas.com. S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S, shostokas.com. Dave, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here with you, Sam.
All right. Now, this is kind of cool. I want to learn about who Dave is. Who are you, my friend?
I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for about 35 years. On the other hand, I delivered my first case of beer when I was 5 years old.
What?
My family was beer wholesalers. My dad used to take me to picnics on the weekends, and I literally delivered my first case of beer when I was 5 years old. I didn't become a lawyer until I was 35, so it's only a little bit longer now that I've been a lawyer than I was a beer guy.
What kind of beer?
It was mainly Schlitz.
Schlitz malt liquor?
Yes, mainly Schlitz. Huh? During the course, my grandfather started.
You got
business.
The Schlitz tall boys. Are you delivering there, matey?
Indeed.
And you also studied in Ireland, is why I'm kind of having fun with that a little bit, right?
Absolutely. No, I went to Trinity College in Dublin as part of my law school.
Wow.
And but that was more associated with Guinness than Schlitz, you know.
Why are you off the beer and on the attorney stuff? What happened there?
You know, a long time ago, when I was like a small kid, I was standing on a park bench. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and my grandfather walked by and he saw me kind of giving a speech to a bunch of other little kids in front of me. And my grandfather said, "You know, that boy's going to be a lawyer," and that's what it turned out to be.
Now, tell me, there's a debate, and I want to get your take on this, okay? I know this is a sidebar for the reason that you're on the radio, but you know, hopefully you can just fly with me. Not only is Dave incredible at being an attorney, delivering beer, doing all these things, but he was a talk show host for quite a while as well from Florida. And so that's what kind of created the Constitutional Soundbites book, which we'll get into in a bit. But I feel like I can kind of take you off target if you're a former talk show host. You'll get this just fine. But tell me, what does the word bar mean? You know how attorneys pass the bar?
Yes, I do.
There's a big debate about this. Are you familiar with this?
I don't know what you mean by the debate. Why don't you give me the debate?
All right. So the mainstream or the government or I don't know who you want to talk to, they say that the bar is just a divider in the court. And the divider in the court divides the kind of average person that attends, say, a court proceedings from the attorneys and the judges and everybody else. It's kind of a dividing line. That's what the bar means. And passing the bar just means kind of an exam that you take, right?
That's exactly correct. That's the history behind the term bar, is that in terms of the fact that lawyers and other court personnel are allowed to go past the bar and stand in the well of the court. And that's kind of what your license allows you to do.
I understand. And that's all, you know, I understand that history and I understand that basic explanation. But a lot of people are saying that the bar means something else, which means it's basically your kind of a loyalty to the British crown. Are you?
Yeah, I've heard some of that and people put that forward. But the fact is, you know, pursuant to Article 6 of the United States Constitution and the fact that lawyers are considered officers of the court, and i.e. judicial officers, we, in fact, in terms of admission to the bar, have to take an oath to obey, support, and protect the Constitution of the United States. So there's no relationship between the between that theory of your loyalty to the British Crown. Your loyalty is to the United States Constitution.
So you don't believe that bar means what they say it does, and that when you're a member of the bar, that's what you're committing to?
No, that's clearly not what you're committing to. You have to raise your hand and swear, pursuant, again, to Article 6 of the Constitution that requires an oath.
If the word bar means nothing but a kind of denote or designator in the court or whatever, how can they make you a member of a bar or kick you out of the bar or disbar you? The reason I ask this is because they disbarred Giuliani.
They did.
They also they tried to disbar Sidney Powell, right?
They have.
So I don't mean to play games. I'm not trying to trap you. I'm just trying to really understand. I'm not an attorney. I'm a pretty educated guy to some degree. But, you know, hey, what's the deal, though? If it's just a bar that separates the court, then you can't get kicked out of that, can you?
Well, you can get kicked out of the license, having the license to practice law. The term bar goes well beyond just being able to go across this little barrier. It involves your ability to file papers in court and to represent other individuals in court. There's a whole lot of things that go associated with that. And, of course, that's what they did to the mayor in New York for no good reason. That we could talk about that for a long time. Which, by the way, I was in court with Mayor Giuliani. As a side note, back in Pennsylvania in 2020, I was part of the president's legal team in Pennsylvania in 2020. I testified before the Pennsylvania Senate. So we can go on for a long time about a lot of these.
No, I understand. But the point is, you're saying, hey, I'm an attorney, guys. I've never sworn to no British nothing. It isn't true.
No, I swore to the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Illinois and the Constitution of Florida, the two places where I've been admitted.
All right. Anyway, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I thought it was worth kind of an... I always like to ask attorneys because, you know what? I don't know. I've never passed the bar. I don't know. And I can see all these different meanings, and I understand the allegations, and, you know, I mean, I can see the concern, obviously.
Yeah, but my requirement four times related to that, related to being licensed as a lawyer, in federal court two times, in federal court two times, in state court, I've had to take oaths to support the United States Constitution.
All right, well, that's a good news, fantastic reality check. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about your books now. You first wrote a book about the Constitution, right?
Yes.
How did that come to be?
Well, as you mentioned,
radio show, right?
As you mentioned at the outset, I was I had a radio show for about 4 years, primarily out of Southwest Florida and in Tampa in the Florida area. It's called Constitutionally Speaking, and during the week of Constitutionally Speaking, the show was on the weekends, and during the week we'd do promos. The promos were called A Minute of Constitutionally Speaking. And I'd answer in 60 seconds, what did Jefferson mean by all men are created equal? What can a president legally do with his pen and his phone? What can what's a well-regulated militia? And so I collected all the promos, and then I added to them, and I wound up with 150 FAQs about the Constitution. It runs from the preamble through the seven articles of the Constitution and the 10 amendments, and the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights. And so this is it. This is kind of nice because nobody these days is going to read the Federalist Papers, right? Everybody's looking for...
They should. I encourage them to all the time.
I know, but they're not going to. God bless you, Sam, you know, for your faith in humanity.
Those debates and the understanding behind the discussion points are really critical to understand if you want to understand the Founding Fathers and their intentions, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we need to do and what we do not do anymore. People do not understand. There's all kinds of people I see in the booth here. You've given away pocket constitutions. All kinds of people carry pocket constitutions, but they don't really necessarily know what it is that they've got in their pocket.
All right, let's talk about your book. So you did a bunch of sound bites on the radio. That eventually culminated into the book, which has now become an educational treasure, right?
Yeah, we actually, you know, it's interesting. We've also done it in Spanish. Capsulas Informativas Constitucionales. It's the only book in the whole entire world that explains the founding documents in Spanish. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
And we're working with some Latino pastors and hoping to distribute that through 40,000 Latino churches around the country.
Because our greatest export ought to be the Constitution anyway, right?
It absolutely is. It absolutely should be. And, you know, a number of years ago, I've studied a little Spanish, some in Costa Rica, some in Cuba, so I can read some Spanish. And I went to see what was available about the Constitution in Spanish. First thing I found was on Wikipedia. It was called Padres Fundadores, right? The Founding Fathers. But the first line on there said the Constitution of 1787 sanctioned the system of slavery. And I went, oh, my goodness, there are 400 million people in the world that speak Spanish, and this is the first thing they're reading about our Constitution. I said, I got to try and do something about it.
All right. So this brings me kind of the next discussion point, really. The creating of the Declaration of Independence, that really kind of highlights the Founding Fathers' intent as it all unfolded, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't that fit into this discussion?
It fits into this discussion immensely because the truth is the Declaration of Independence is the inspiration and the Constitution is the execution. If you do not understand the Declaration...
Stop.
Yeah.
I need you to say that again because that line is the quintessential understanding here. Say that again.
The Declaration of Independence is the inspiration, and the Constitution is the execution.
All right, keep going, sir. I just want people to really understand that because I think that really lays it out.
Yeah, it's funny that they make us, everybody, generally speaking, learns the preamble while they're in school, you know, we the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union. However, that's not there's 58 words there. There's 55 much more important words. Those 55 more important words are in the Declaration of Independence. I refer to it as the American Creed. And that would be, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. If we all knew those 55 words, it would be very difficult to slice us and dice us into the interest groups that they try and do.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. This is really the critical discussion points to be had, and it's all about education, folks. If you don't understand your history, you don't understand your roots, you don't understand your culture, you don't understand your heritage, you're going to lose it, is the real bottom line here. And that's really the reason you do what you do, right, Dave?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. You know, it's very interesting. There's five rights in the First Amendment.
Five guarantees.
There's five rights in the First Amendment, but the last one, right to petition the government.
Yeah,
for redress of grievances. When you say we need to know those or we'll lose it, that one particular right has, in fact, been lost.
Just ask Sidney Powell at the courts. Just ask the state of Texas at the courts. Just ask Donald Trump and his allegations. And ask Giuliani who got disbarred. And the reason I'm highlighting this so much is I'm also, in addition to being a talk show host and promoting Loving Liberty, the radio network that syndicates us, behind us is a booth, or behind me, I should say, is a booth, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. And I'm actually the vice president of operations at the CSPOA. We just had an election fraud conference that was out of this world a day before Freedom Fest.
That's what I understand. I was not in town for that, but I've heard of a couple of the people. I understand some friends of mine, Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips, were there.
Yes.
You know.
And if you keep friends with us, we'll keep you in the loop on what we're doing, by the way.
I look forward to doing that.
We'll do that. Anyway, I digress, except to say this really highlights kind of the point, though, the redress of grievances. People went January 6th saying peacefully. That was most people. I agree there was a few bad apples in the barrel, but most of the people went peacefully and said, Congress, please look into this. We're concerned. They got shut down, sir. No redress of grievance if you look at the courts in January 6th, huh?
Absolutely not. No, that right, there's a history on that right, too, because it's with the what I would call the other all-stars, you know, press and religion and speech and assembly. But there's reasons that it was among the all-stars. And the history of that one is actually when they said petition for redress of grievances, there was a tradition where, in fact, citizens could take their grievances to the legislature, and the legislature was bound to address them and hear them. We lost that during the, basically during the 1850s when the Democrats didn't want to hear about slavery abolition. So it's
the origins of that are kind of in the Magna Carta, right? Magna Carta.
Magna Carta, yes, in 1215.
That was kind of the quintessential starting of that kind of pushback that really culminated into.
Well, they took a knife to King John's throat that day, you know.
Yeah, that was a little bit of pushback.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
I'm being a little bit polite about that, but kind of helping people understand the history then. So your books, how widely are they distributed? How do we get them in more places? I mean, people got to know this stuff.
They're, of course, available on Amazon, both in hard copy and Kindle. And then there's a variety of other online aspects to them. Barnes & Noble has it online. You can find them generally.
Barnes & Noble, is that in the Smithsonian these days, sir?
It could be. I don't even know if there's a brick-and-mortar one.
I'm just teasing. So what do you expect for the future, then, with these two books, then? I mean, is the goal just to promote those? Is the goal to focus on your practice? What's kind of the plan for Dave?
You mentioned the website, shestokas.com, and that has over 200 essays about the Constitution, and I am now organizing those and repurposing them. The next book will be the collected essays on the Constitution.
Constitutionally speaking is the Constitutional Educational Series, right?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Yes, it is.
So people need to understand that, because when you go to the website, then you're starting to break out, and you mentioned that you've got a partner and you guys are working on taking all those different sound bites that you had and turning them into answers to constitutional questions, right?
That's exactly right. There's guys in Chicago, SAT Media, SAT Media, and we are now turning this into videos as well.
Delightful. Why are you in Illinois, sir? And that place is a liberal state, isn't it? It's a conservative constitutional state, except for the Chicago area.
You know, that's exactly right.
A lot of
right.
people there. In fact, I went to Illinois. This is a cool story you might enjoy. I was growing a beard because I was in a play. And so I had a big beard and everything. And I went to Illinois, and I went to a town in Illinois called Mount Olive. And I went there, and it was the coolest little town. And it was, just like out of the 1800s almost, it felt like. They had an old courthouse and everything. And I went in there, and long story short, the judges' desk in the court was open. They just weren't in session or whatever. And I literally saw the court, what do they call that thing that they hit the thing with?
The gavel?
The gavel. And I just thought, you know what, I got to go over there, and I got to sit in this chair, and I got to bang this gavel, man, because I just think it'd be cool. And so I went in there, and I did this, and then all of a sudden the judge showed up. And I thought, oh, no. And I was sitting there with my beard and stuff, and I had this gavel in my hand. And the judge was super cool. He was like an old-school judge in a lot of ways. A very nice guy. And he didn't do anything except for smiled. And he walked up behind me and he said, "Sir, you deserve to be here." And then he let me take my picture with a judge standing behind me with his hands on my shoulders, and I had this gavel in my hand.
Classic.
And they're like, "I'm the judge, you know?" And I just, I said, can I really do this? Can I hit the table? He said, "Sure." Anyway, he was so cool and let me do this. That's my remember of Mount Olive, Illinois, sir.
That's fantastic. That's a great story. Yeah, there's a lot of great downstate judges who are like you see on TV.
Yeah, anyway, the point is, Chicago aside, Illinois is a great state, but why are you there?
My grandparents went there a long, long time ago, about 115 years.
Thing.
About 115 years when they escaped communism from Lithuania. And there's a separate story all about that regarding my one grandmother who was one of 11 children, eight of whom were slaughtered by communists. And that has to do with my particular dedication to our country.
It's an immigrant story.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Well, by the way, on this same network, LovingLiberty.net, by the way, is a lady by the name of Lydia Nettle. And Lydia does a show called Ask an Immigrant, where she interviews people about their stories, about their immigration stories, and or if they have relatives with immigration stories, et cetera. We need to get you to talk to her, too.
I would love to talk to her. I'd love to talk about my grandmother's story, you know.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just the coolest place, man. Freedom Fest, you meet people, you rub shoulders with some of the best people on the planet. How have you liked Freedom Fest, Dave?
I've had a great time. I really particularly enjoyed Tea Party Patriots Election Integrity Project information, because I've been involved in those kinds of things. As I mentioned, I would work with the mayor back in Pennsylvania. Then I did things for the National Republican Senatorial Committee in Georgia. I was a consultant to the Arizona House on their audit. So I'm really very interested in election matters.
And as an attorney, you certainly have something to say about it, that's for sure. What do we do, though, when we don't have any redress of grievance in the courts? I mean, what is our next step, Dave? And as an attorney, I want to ask you this, because a lot of people are saying it's going to lead to civil war. I pray that it doesn't, but I can see the writing on the wall, though, kind of.
Yeah.
And at some point, if there's no other way place to go, the natives are going to get restless is the problem.
You know, that's one of the reasons they do not teach the Declaration of Independence in schools, because the Declaration of Independence, among other things, includes an explanation of the right of revolution. And
sometimes the necessity, right?
And sadly, sometimes it becomes necessary, as Jefferson said. And so we're going to, we have to do that. You know, they've got their 28 grievances in there. And when the government, that's a list of the things when the government has now become illegitimate. And in fact, there's a whole lot on that checklist that Jefferson put that our government is engaged in.
You know, you mentioned as you wrote the book about the creation of the Declaration of Independence, you said there's some interesting stories there. Do you want to tell us one of them? Give people a little teaser for kind of what's on the website?
Sure. You know, at the opening, during the Second Continental Congress, there's a lot of people that would whisper independence, the word independence. They go to City Tavern, they might talk about it. But nobody would ever talk about the word independence in public. They would never do anything about that in public. And that was because that was considered treason against the king. And treason against the king in those days was really kind of nasty punishment.
Yeah, you offend the crown, they behead you, my friend.
Well, you know, it wasn't just that. They drug you through the streets first, and then they cut your guts out and burned them while you were watching them. And then they hung you until you were almost dead. And then they cut your head off.
All right.
Then they cut your head off. And the interesting thing about the guys not wanting to say
to lop off your head would be to be gracious.
Oh, no. That was the last part of the puzzle, yeah.
I know. I'm just saying if they were to skip all the other part, it would be gracious for you.
Yeah. But, it would be very generous of them to do so. And in fact, they actually did know people that had, in fact, lost their heads. In the aftermath of the Battle of Bunker Hill, there was a fellow by the name of Dr. Joseph Warren, who was the John Adams family physician, besides being the president of the Massachusetts legislature, and also a general in the Massachusetts militia. In the aftermath of Bunker Hill, he was, in fact, beheaded. So these guys actually knew people that had, in fact, been beheaded. So when they said their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor, they weren't kidding.
Yeah, you got to be very serious, my lad.
Exactly. No, we're back to the Irish then.
You got to be very, very careful about.
Yes.
And so, but they worked on it, though, in the right places. They went to taverns. They went to places where they could literally work together in a safe environment they knew they could trust, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's a story in there about Adams and Jefferson sharing a beer and how they it was over a beer that they
together. We're already back to beer, huh, Dave?
Yeah, we're back to beer. And I guess that's got my interest. That's brings my life full circle. Absolutely.
But the point of, about the beer, though, was it was really people spending time together in meaningful conversation that eventually led to our liberties. That's really the point.
That is exactly the point, how important the taverns were. On the other hand, Ben Franklin said beer was proof that God loves us.
Well, and then you got the country song that says God is great, mm-hmm. beer's good, and people are crazy.
There you go.
And all that's true, too.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Dave, we appreciate you. Do you have a booth here, or are you just walking around talking about your book?
You know, actually, I've been doing some work with the guys from Fox Nation, the Fox Nation live feed, Talent 7. I'm also their attorney. And so I've been doing a few things with
you're
Fox
the attorney
Nation.
For Fox Nation?
Not Fox Nation generally, for the guys that are handling the live feed.
I see.
And I've also been I'm friends with some folks at Real America's Voice, and then so we're doing a few things.
All right, what attorney work do you primarily do then? Are you a litigator?
Actually, I spent the last year and change running for Illinois Attorney General. I'm going back to doing lawyer work, and right now, as soon as I get back, I've actually got an election contest. There's a guy that lost a nomination for. Republican for Congress by 343 votes, and he wants me to handle that case.
He wants to know if there's election fraud, doesn't he?
I can tell him yes.
What? Even in his case?
I can tell him yes.
It's that rampant? It's that belligerent? It's that in your face? It's everywhere?
It's absolutely, Steve. It's everywhere.
All right. What do we do to stop it? Can we stop it, or will the only choice be a revolution?
Well, no. Election law, generally speaking, is written with the assumption that there's always going to be an adequate adversarial oversight. But there are so many jurisdictions that are one-party jurisdictions, that oversight doesn't exist.
Yeah, like my whole state, yeah.
Yeah, and there you go.
And, Utah's a very Republican state.
Well, and you know what? Tendency to take advantage of these matters, if you're the one-party jurisdiction, it doesn't know any parties. Whether it's Democrat or Republican, if they're the guys that are in charge of the machinery, they have a tendency to take advantage of that.
Yeah, do you know that you're saying the exact words Barack Obama used to say?
No, I hate to hear that.
True, he even said, hey, Democrats, he said Republicans and Democrats, when they're in charge of the election, they just have a tendency to help the machines make sure they're right.
Yeah, make sure they're right. Okay, I did not hear that from
soundbite from Barack Obama. That's kind of funny because he's like, yeah, it's not just Republicans that tampered with elections. Democrats have too. And
absolutely.
It's kind
absolutely.
Of a funny thing. All right, my friend, I sure appreciate you, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Dave. His last name's kind of hard to pronounce. Shostakis is how I'm going to say it. Shostakis.com is the website, ladies and gentlemen, to check out his incredible books. And if you need a good constitutional attorney, you got it.
Terrific.
And Dave Shostakis. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for
and
having
this
me.
Is Liberty Roundtable Live. Absolutely. And Dave made a claim about Ben Franklin saying, you know, beer is proof that God loves us or whatever. And some say it's beer. Some say it's wine is proof. You see it on T-shirts. You see that quote everywhere. But it's not exactly what Ben Franklin said. He actually was in France, and he made some statements that got translated from France to English. And it's not exactly what he said. He was basically talking a little bit more about Christ and water turning to wine and this kind of stuff, or, kind of a discussion. Anyway, the long story short is I don't know that Ben Franklin really attributed made the statement that they claim. There's a lot of T-shirts and, you know, pubs and everything else that kind of promote this quote. But the facts are a little more nuanced than that. And it's not really as clear that he said that as people want to make it seem. Did he drink alcohol? Yes, he did. Did he like beer? Yeah, he had some beer. But as far as we understand, he liked wine better than beer anyway. But a long story short, though, I don't know that that's an accurate quote to Ben Franklin, even though it's everywhere. You got to dig. I always check my sources, and as I check, I don't know that we have hard evidence that Ben Franklin quoted it the way they're saying, or that the context was exactly like that either. Anyway, very interesting kind of an update for you on that. I am Sam Bushman, and this wraps up 2 hours of award-winning, hard-hitting talk radio live and on demand at your fingertips. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, BrideyOnRadio.com, and an ever-increasing growing list of affiliates. We sure appreciate all of you for your support and involvement. We need your financial support as well, folks. Donate liberally today, LovingLiberty.net. Spread the word, share the love. We the people can restore America. Will you help? God save the Republic.